And welcome to another episode of Nights at the Roundtable. Tis your boy, Man Weezy, and we are joined with Be Real out in LA. Say what up. And then we got David Howard, aka the Naked Pastor. Where are you hailing from?
I'm from Canada.
I love Canada. Yeah. I love Canadian people. I don't like Canadian customs. I've had so many issues, like bad issues with Canadian customs.
You mean customs crossing the border?
Yeah. Wow. Mm-hmm. Bro, twice. Yeah. I've had a gun pulled on me once in the airport. And what? Then this other guy called me a retard. All because I didn't know where I was going. I was like,
you gotta know where you're going.
Yeah, they were like, where are you going? And I'm like, I don't know. Can you guys are my road manager? And they're like, what are you, a retard? You don't know where you're going? They literally told me that. I was like, wow, do you come to America and we call you retards? What the heck? But the people are freaking amazing. I love Canadian people. They're so nice.
We are.
Yeah. Which you are
as well.
You came onto this podcast and we're super grateful. Thank you. The first thing I want to ask. Naked pastor.
Yes.
At any point, did you preach naked? Did you run naked?
No. I'm a very modest guy. First of all, thanks for having me on your show. And hi, everybody out there. I'm very, very modest. No, I don't. I've never preached naked. And naked pastor, be warned, is one word. Like, don't Google naked and then pastor, because you'll see
that's a great disclaimer.
So naked pastor is one word. Make sure you do that, and you'll find me at nakedpastor.com. But I called myself naked pastor because I started blogging while I was a pastor, and I wanted people to see behind the curtain what really goes on in the life of a pastor in the church. And I was going to reveal it all. So that's where the naked comes from.
I love that.
Yeah.
How long have you been the naked pastor?
I've been the naked pastor for 18 years.
Sweet Jesus.
Wow.
Yeah, because I remember in one of your videos, you said 2010 is when you left?
I left the ministry in 2010, but I'd already been blogging 5 years.
Okay. And tell us that story. What was the exodus like? Why?
I just couldn't grow there anymore. I didn't feel I had the freedom to be my authentic self, which is one of my most passionate driving forces for me personally. Mm-hmm. I just need to be free to be myself. And I can't handle control. I buckle under authority. Mm-hmm. And I just had to get out of there. You know, it wasn't that the church was a really bad thing at the time. And we had the church community was great. I had friends there. The leadership team was great. All that was fine. But we just all agreed that we couldn't continue on the same path together because I was growing in a different direction than they were comfortable with. So we called it an amicable divorce, where they went their way and I went mine.
Interesting. Yeah. And was there any, like, what we consider church hurt? Like, was that a thing for you, or was it kind of like, no, I made my peace, I'm good?
I know all about church hurt.
Yeah.
I've experienced a lot of church hurt. So, or what they call spiritual abuse, or, you know, trauma, all that kind of thing. Because I've been in, you know, I've been in the church. I've been serving the church as a pastor for nearly 30 years. And I was in the church long before that. So I've been around the block and I've seen a lot of things. And, when we left, it was all cool. But it was traumatic, you know, because our whole world was wrapped up in the church. My wife and I, Lisa and I, everything was wrapped up in the church. You know, our friends, my income, you know, how we lived our lives, our activities, everything. And when we left, we sort of had an agreement that after 6 months of leave, we would be welcome to come back and continue participating in the congregation. But things went south pretty darn quickly after that. And we just couldn't go back. Mm. And so, it was painful because that meant leaving our friends. And that's one of the biggest pain points when people leave the church is loneliness. I mean, you know, you have to leave your friends and your support and all that. So it's very traumatic for many people.
Do you say you have to leave because you felt like you had to leave your friends, or is it like blatantly obvious that they don't want to rock with you anymore because they think you've backslidden or whatever that term would be?
Yeah, there was that. Okay. For sure. You know, I was, as Naked Pastor, I'd already been blogging and writing and doing videos and cartoons for several years, about 5 years, and about 4 years, actually. And I was flying under the radar. I mean, people in my own congregation didn't even look at them. They're like, we have to listen to you every week. Why would we go to your blog, you know, kind of thing. And suddenly, though, Naked Pastor started to get noticed around the world and locally, and people were starting to share my cartoons and my work and my views. And suddenly I was on the map. Mm. And head office, you know, my superiors and everything were getting letters of concern from other pastors, other churches. And you know, I even got a phone call where they advised me to run all my material through them first. Oh, to be, wow, edited. And like I said, freedom is very important to me. I was like, man, I can't live like that. And I knew my time was up. I knew my time was up. And sure enough, later, it was time. It was just too much going on, where people were hearing from other people that I, you know, God had lifted his hand off of me and removed my anointing, and that I was no longer a pastor, and that I was a fox in the vineyard, and, you know, all this kind of stuff. Wow. So it just became impossible. Yeah.
Man. So would you say, it sounded like you described like kind of one moment that felt like the tipping point. What were some of the other things, like some of the signs for you that you understood, hey, the rate that I'm growing at, the direction I'm growing differs from where this body currently is and where this body's currently going?
Mm-hmm. What was kind of disappointing was up to this point, like I said, had a great leadership team and a great community, and we were kind of experimenting on how to be a really authentic community while being a church. And that was something I was very passionate about. And we were doing, you know, experimenting with this authenticity and people being allowed to be free as themselves and believe what they believed and to struggle as they struggled, and for each person to decide how they can be spiritual. And up to this point, it had been really, really great until there was all these conflicting reports about me and rumors going around. And then, you know, my ideas were sort of growing, and I kind of naively thought that the church would sort of travel along together on this road. Mm-hmm. But alas, it wasn't meant to be, because too many people want church to be church.
Yeah.
And to be familiar to them. I mean, I actually had people sitting down across from me at my pastor's desk and saying, we pay you to tell us what to believe. And
sheesh.
It was like, I'm not your guy, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I had to move on for them and for me.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it was, I was showing my wife your page and I laughed and chuckled, because if you know me, I'm kind of like, I'm an 8 in the Enneagram. So I'm like, no frills. I'll get straight to it. And I'm going to tell you in your face. Like, I don't really beat around the bush. Mm-hmm. I thought it was hilarious on one of your posts, and I had an impression, but you could tell me what you really meant. Where you were outside of your old church and you held up a sign and you were like, this was my old church. It's now a dojo. So I immediately took that like zing, but not like in a, like you weren't doing it in a like whatever, but it kind of felt like, I don't want to say a dig. It felt like you were kind of like,
I was just telling the truth.
But anyone would take it, like the people that are there will probably take it as a dig. But I kind of feel like the way I took it is, okay, remove this person. This is the outcome.
Yeah. Oh.
What are you going to say?
It's funny because I interpreted it different, actually. The way that I interpreted it was like, listen, this, there's twofold. One, my thought is like, obviously the concept of church and I think what it looks like when it plays out, at least manifests in my life now, it's so much bigger than a building.
Yeah.
And like these buildings are going to continually be inhabited by different things. No church is really going to stay around like in an actual building. And it's like, this was my church. Now it's a dojo. Like you guys got all caught up in all of this. Like forget the building. You
That's
know?
A good way of looking at it too.
See on the, in that picture, you can see on the roof, there's a kind of a point and there's a little iron nub on the top. And that's where the people who bought the building took down the cross that was up there. It was a huge iron cross. And, you know, we were quite a, you know, quite a successful congregation, really, you know, because we owned the building outright. We had no mortgage payments. And like, wow. I helped them get to that point where they were mortgage free. And it was wonderful. But then when I left, another pastor took over. And then he did his best for some years, but then it closed under him. And it's just there's something about driving by that church because I'm just down the road from it. I drive by that building and my stomach flips still every time I go by. It's like a lot of cool shit happened there, and you know, and now it's a gym, and apparently it's doing well.
The gym's doing well. That's amazing.
It's just, man. You know, it's really, really bizarre that so much went on there, and a lot of good and a lot of weird and a lot of bad went on there. So a lot of history.
Yeah.
You know, that church used to be famous, and we used to put on huge conferences with thousands of people, and we'd get in big names from everywhere. And it was hugely influenced in the region as well as across Canada. And, you know, now it's a show.
You know, what's interesting. Like I have a bunch of friends that are pastors and I love them. It's like, I don't ever think anything negative about it.
Yeah.
But sometimes I don't know how to reconcile the fact that you can never convince me that that is a church now. Like, no one can convince me that, because everybody who goes to this deconstruction part, they have a time where they don't go to a traditional church because, of course, they're probably triggered from the greeting, from the greeters to the all the way to the, you know, three song fast worship, you know, offering three song slow worship. Like, everything triggers them, you know?
Yeah.
I don't get triggered by those things.
Right.
I've just fallen in love with what church can really be. And from what I see in the scriptures of just like people being normal in normal communities, like just normal. So now like Brandon, his wife, our friend William, like anytime we get together and hang out, it doesn't matter what we are doing. Mm-hmm. We are sharing life. Mm-hmm. We are sharing love. If any one of us needs something, we're always all there. It doesn't matter. It'll be in a text thread. Hey, so-and-so needs something. So or it's so-and-so's birthday or whatever it is. And then we all come together and we just make things happen. And I'm like, see, now no one can convince me that this is not church. This feels like church because it feels like we're doing life together. And sometimes I think, is it this easy? Like, I think it was meant to be this easy that you would find a group of people that were like-minded and then you would influence the people around you everywhere y'all went because you moved like this unit that had purpose. Mm-hmm. And you would just influence people wherever you go as opposed to having all this talent, having all this influence, having all this charisma just to hook someone to get them back to a building so that they can find God there as opposed to finding God exactly where they're at.
Yeah. I'm very much where you are. Like I always feel like I have to clarify because a lot of people assume because I'm critiquing the church that I'm its enemy and I'm attacking the church, which I'm not. I love the church. I love, you know, it's like my mother. I grew up in, you know, in my mother's arms, basically, spiritually speaking. Mm-hmm. But she can be pretty controlling and sometimes abusive.
Right.
So, you know, it was best for me to move out for my own mental health and everything, spiritual health and all. But, you know, when it comes to church and how people do church and the robes and the incense and the bells and whistles and smoke and mirrors and dry ice and music styles and building and staff and all, I don't care. I really, really, mm-hmm. really don't care. That's all just style to me. But if you can, mm-hmm. in that context, whatever the context is, from house church to high church Catholic, if you can have a healthy sense of community where you feel safe and you can be you and you can grow the way you want to grow and so on, mm-hmm. and you feel supported and there's love and there's no coercion, control, abuse, manipulation, all that, man, then you found gold.
Right. And
all the other stuff is just style.
Yeah.
Yeah. That it's interesting what you're saying, because I wanted to ask you the question and kind of like split it. Like, so before you left your kind of traditional ministry role, yep. what was the church of the future that you envisioned versus now, which I feel like you kind of shared a little bit of what church looks like for you and what you envision the church to be. Mm-hmm.
Well, I was kind of feeling like we were onto something at my church. It was called Rosse Vineyard. It was a vineyard church. Okay. And for those who don't know, it's kind of evangelical theology with contemporary worship music. So Hillsong-ish, without all the weird stuff. So it, for me, sorry. So I sort of envision, can we be a really healthy, functional community where we really do support and love one another? And the reason I know this work is because Lisa and I experiment with that in our own relationship, where she's fully allowed to be herself, I'm fully allowed to be myself. How can I be free without violating her freedom? How can she be free without violating mine? We figure that out every step of the way. We navigate that. And mm-hmm. the same with our three kids. All three kids now are adults and they're like our best friends, but it took a lot of work to get there, figuring out how can we allow our three kids to be who they are, and that, and they can learn how to let us be who we are. We learn how to live together. And it was dynamic, very powerful, to the point where we feel we really raised them well in a safe environment and a healthy environment. And now they're healthy young adults, you know? So I translated that into community, into the church, thinking this must be possible. And so we would actually experiment with ways in which we could trust one another and love one another and support one another, where I could be free without violating their freedom. They could be free without violating my freedom, and authenticity with accountability. Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can be authentic, but if you hurt someone, you're going to be informed. And vice versa.
Right.
And so, I thought we were really onto something, and it was exciting. And, you know, to this day, I still have people saying, you know, what I miss most about Rosse Vineyard is the community. It was just powerful. And it spoiled us for anything else. And it was wonderful. But it's weird, though, because people want that, but they still want the packaging.
Right.
They want the safety. Yeah.
And I'm like, you can't, if you try to can and manufacture this, it's going to ruin it. You can't have both. If you want success and, you know, all the lights and mirrors and, you know, all the publicity and the, you know, all that, or do you want authentic, organic community? You've got to make that choice. But people thought maybe we could combine them, but I always know, if you try to combine them, it kills community. So that's what happened.
Authentic community. Because what you're saying, that's real. And that's like, to me, that's where actual real life change happens. That's where real growth happens. Mm-hmm. That's where real love thrives.
Yeah.
Because to me, you know, a lot of the church communities that I've been a part of, in the past, just over the years, you know, it's like they love using the word, they love the sound of it, But when it comes to the actual dangers of having an authentic community, it's like the risk reward thing comes in and they're like, oh, this is kind of a gamble if we choose to go this way. So let's try and manufacture this and keep this within these sort of boulders or not boulders, but borders.
Right.
So,
yeah, it's what I often,
sorry.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
I often use the analogy of Israel leaving Egypt and the Jewish people and how it sounded appealing to get out from under this slavery and building pyramids and making bricks without straw and blah, blah, blah. But once they got to their first obstacle and once they got to the desert, it was like, man, I miss the meat, leeks and onions, you know. At least we had 3 square meals a day and a roof over our heads. And here we're facing certain death, you know.
Yeah.
And that's what freedom's like, though. It's scary, and you know, few people, once they get a taste of it, it's like they don't know. Some people keep going, some go back.
What I found is with me, the second I got free, the scary part was, oh snap, now it's up to me to internally develop the voice of God. Whereas most of us are used to externally relying on the voice of God, meaning people are going to tell us what to do. If I'm part of a church, we're going to have rules in this church. The pastor's going to tell you those rules. As long as I stay in those rules, I feel safe that I am a good Christian. The second I stepped out of all the rules and now I'm like, oh my God, I got to make my own rules. Then it started feeling like, oh gosh, am I doing it right? Is this Christian enough? Is this not? And I started thinking to myself, bruh, you're free thinking about being a slave again. Like that's what you're doing. Yeah. And I always tell people the second Christianity starts feeling hard, I think you're doing it wrong. Because I think you've shifted focus from God being the person that is the only reason why you or us are even having a conversation about God or being good to how can I be good enough? And that's just a losing conversation.
There's a little story in the Hebrew Bible where God summons Israel to the mountaintop to meet with them and speak. And all the people are like, Moses, you go for us. Like they're too scared. And right then and there, you've established, you know, the clergy.
Right.
But that's, and it's like I already told you, I had people tell me, we pay you to tell us what to believe and how to behave. Like you need to, you know, run our lives. Because living free is scary. It means responsibility. It means driving your own car rather than taking the bus. So it's hard.
Yeah. And where would you say freedom has led you? Like where you're at now? Because for me, because I wasn't at the conferences, I'm no longer touring, I'm no longer in front of thousands in arenas doing my thing. Now it's just me and a mic, this little podcast, and my music that people don't consider Christian anymore, but I love it. And I'm like, man, I'm kind of out here by myself, but I'm happy. Like I'm genuinely, I don't live with the stress of, does God hate me anymore? I don't ask that question.
I'm living my best life, seriously. I'm happy. I no longer feel conflicted all the time. I really felt conflicted in the church because I did a video of this recently where I feel a lot of people are in the ministry because they really do want to help people. But you've got the system to deal with, which has different ideas. And all systems, all institutions, even though they might proclaim that they're out there to help people, their number one concern has to be security and survival. And which comes down to money and numbers. And the church is no different. It's just a fact of life. I'm not attacking or judging. It's just a fact of life that institutions, even though they say they're top priority is their people. The top priority is survival.
Yeah.
Otherwise, yeah, you wouldn't be able to help the people. So when you're in the ministry, even when you're in the church, you're caught in this conflict that the system creates, where you're trying to help people without getting fired, basically.
Right.
Very much like social media these days, including YouTube and TikTok and Instagram. You know, I just want to be real. I just want to help people. But man, I got to figure out the friggin', you know, algorithm.
Right.
And I'm trying not to get banned and reported and, you know, all this stuff. It just feels like church to me all over again. But that's just the nature of institutions.
Yeah.
And that's just what they do. But I'm happy. I'm free. You know, I'm helping people. And that's makes it all worthwhile.
Yeah. No, I agree. Like I always think it's hilarious when I tell people, man, I feel free. And this is post me being in the Christian industry. And it's not to diss it, because I still have a lot of friends that are in the industry and I'm so happy for them. But trying to imagine myself back there, I don't know if I could ever do it, just because I think some people like the rules and I think they feel safe in the rules, but I no longer feel safe in the rules. Like my eyes have seen.
I've known some worship leaders. I don't know if that's what you called yourself, or a Christian musician or whatever, who were in it. And yeah, they couldn't keep going, you know, and tough, really tough. And some of them are trying to rebuild their careers under kind of a new brand, you know?
Yeah.
And it's a tough go.
So what does reconstruction look like for you? Because we all deconstruct, but what did reconstruction look like for you? So like when you had to build your borders back up and be like, okay, these are the do's and the don'ts now, but they're more based on the wisdom that I'm gaining from actually spending time with God, mm-hmm, and the adverse, like the wisdom of freedom of like, all right, you can do this, bro. Like you're good. What did that look like? You actually building it all back up.
So I'm not an advocate of reconstruction.
Okay.
Yeah.
Keep it going.
I believe in deconstruction because I feel, I did a cartoon recently. Have you heard of Marie Kondo?
Yes.
The Japanese woman who teaches you how to declutter.
Mm-hmm.
So she teaches you how to declutter so that you simplify your life and you basically just have what you need and what you love and enjoy. Anything that doesn't spark joy, get rid of it.
Mm.
And so I did a cartoon recently where a woman confesses that she Marie Kondo'd her faith. And she got rid of anything that didn't spark joy. And she says, basically, I don't really have very much left. And so that to me is actually a really good picture of my deconstruction and many people's deconstruction, where, you know, you're getting rid of junk, not so that you can bring in new junk. You're really simplifying your life down to the very basics, what you need and enjoy. And that's where I think the healthiest place to be is at. So clearing away all the baggage, all the stuff we've adopted, all the stuff we've inherited, all the beliefs that we've been taught, and we get right down to the basics of what we really know is true and what really makes us happy. Boom. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I love that. For a while I was using the illustration of the shipwreck in Acts. And, you know, I was thinking of like, you know, a sort of belief system. A ship is made of all these wooden planks. And I'm sure back in the day it was made of different kind of planks and all these sorts of things that all come together to build this. And it's sort of like the faith that you're handed and the faith that has gotten you to this point. And then there comes a point, as it does for all of us, the storms of life come. For some, it's a faith crisis. For some, it's a loved one that passes. Whatever this kind of catalytic thing is in your life, that shit breaks.
Mm-hmm.
And you start to realize a lot of those planks start to sink to the bottom of the sea. And there's a few good ones that can still float, that are still up. And we put these together and that new ship might feel a lot smaller because it's just back to the basics. It's the ones that you actually need, you know? And so for me, that's kind of been what my reconstruction looks like as well. It's let's get down to the essentials. What do we actually need? What do I actually need to believe to have this connection?
And I think we're saying the same thing, because that imagery helped me so much. So when I said when I say reconstruction, I mean, okay, the ship, which was this big thing, now went to the bottom. There's five planks left. Then we roped these guys up, and now we got a raft. But we had to build the raft so that we could stay afloat. So even at the most basic level, it's constructing some type of simple ideology that's tenable, you know, because that's what it was for me. Like, I'm like, I cannot keep this up. This, I know God is not asking me for all this. I know he's not. He's not like demanding this type of perfection. The industry and this commercial Christianity that we are part of is demanding this, because if you make a mistake, if you do something that's not cool in their eyes, you're done. Like, it's swift and it's hard. Like, the judgment is if we're back in the Old Testament and we're all Lot's running away from Gomorrah. Like, that's how hard it hits.
Right.
And I'm like, man, this don't feel like the new covenant. It feels very much like I'm back in the Old Testament, and I don't know how to foster, like, how can we foster an environment where, when the word says that we should carry each other's burdens and deal with each other's sins gently, like, how do we foster that? Because that sounds like a good place to be, where so-and-so pastor is dealing with some crazy ish, and he can just come to his congregation and be like, y'all, this is what I'm struggling with. And those who are spiritual, restore him gently. Not those who act spiritual, kick his ass off of the freaking team and he don't come back. Thanks so much, y'all, for listening to part one of this episode. We appreciate it greatly. Hey, like and subscribe if you guys are feeling this. Share it with your friends. We appreciate it so much. Please come back next week for part two. Love you.